Ready?
Okay. I'm going to bring the House Committee on Energy and Environment to order. So, folks, today what we're going to do is have a work session on a couple of bills, and then I'll let you know right now for we may have some informational informational presentation from Chris Allenack on our tax credits. It may be that we don't hear all of them that are listed today, but stand by on that. We will not be able to work House Bill 2072 today because we don't have our fiscal paperwork back on it. And I am considering this, just carrying that over to our next meeting.
Mr. Chair, if I could, I have no idea what's going on, but you might get it before the end of the meeting.
Okay.
And in which case, you might want to wait until the end of the meeting to carry it over. But that's up to you, of course.
There's an excellent piece of advice from a very experienced chair that I'm going to take.
Not ignore it.
Okay. But I think we can get our work sessions done at this time. So I'm going to open. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2111. And Beth, can you remind us what this is about?
Mr. Chair and committee members, you originally heard this bill on 3-6. House Bill 2111 would prohibit the inclusion of provisions in any declaration or bylaws of a planned community that prevent an owner from installing or using solar plant panels. The Act would also allow an owner subject to such provisions to petition for removal of the provisions. There's a no revenue impact and a no fiscal impact statement issued on the measure.
I'd entertain a motion on this bill.
Chair Helm, I move House Bill 2111 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Powers moves House Bill 2111 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had some conversations this afternoon with a representative of a pretty prominent HOA, and looking at the bill, we did agree that some additional verbiage might be helpful, i.e. that it really doesn't delineate any sort of a process to go through to screen requests and to just consider requests and so forth. And in many of these HOAs, there are design processes in place that have to be approved and so forth, but this doesn't, it seems like it's outside of that. And I'm not trying to set up a criteria for preventing the installation of panels, but somehow it just seems like it would be a better bill if there was more clear language in that bill. I just throw that out. I mean, there were no amendments to the bill. We had one hearing, we had one representative of one representative testifying in behalf of it, so there hasn't been a ton of input or work on the concept, so I just throw that out. But I'll be a no on the base bill as it is, but I could get to a yes if there was a way to maybe clean up some of that language.
Any other discussion? Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be joining the Vice Chair Johnson in his position, but I agree there's some really good parts in this. I would just, having worked in this area, I would like a little more detail on how you could work toward addressing the other concerns that come up when you're dealing with these kinds of issues. But so there's a way to get there. I just don't think the bill has it in it at this time.
Thank you. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill as it's written prohibits a provision, or makes a provision unenforceable that in the declaration of bylaws that prohibits an owner from installing solar panels. And using this, or using solar access, solar panels for obtaining solar access. I am aware of several homeowners associations that have design committees that require certain kinds of design features to be met nothing in this bill prohibits the design committee from enforcing design criteria, except if those design criteria would prohibit the owner from installing solar panels. I've been personally through the process with a prominent homeowners association on this issue, and they agreed that our proposal was sufficient to meet their design criteria. What I think this bill does is prevents the homeowners association from outright banning solar panels. And in that sense, I think it's adequate and ready to go.
Thank you. I'm going to stand at ease for a moment. We're now back in order. On House Bill 2111, I'm going to carry that bill over to our Monday meeting and hopefully provide some time for the chief sponsor to look at those types of ideas. And can I send them your way, Representative Jones? Okay. Thank you for that.
Chair Helm, I rescind the motion.
Okay. Representative Powers rescinds the motion to move HB 2111 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any objection to that motion? Okay, seeing none. So that'll carry over to our Monday meeting and may carry over further if more work needs to be done.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2132. Beth, can you remind us what this bill is all about?
Mr. Chair and committee members, this bill was originally heard on 222. There's a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact and a no revenue impact statement issued on the measure. House Bill 2132 would expand the purpose that improvements can be made on under the Property Assessed Clean Energy Program to include energy storage, smart electric vehicle charging stations, and water efficiency, and clarifies that any unpaid final assessments are a lien on each lot in favor of the local government and have priority over all other liens and encumbrances.
I would entertain a motion on this bill.
Chair Helm, I move House Bill 2132 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Power moves House Bill 2132 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Bernhardt?
Aye.
Representative Benz?
Aye.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Colby?
Aye.
Representative
Rushkin? Excuse.
Aye.
Vice Chair Johnson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Powell?
Aye.
Chair Helm?
Aye. The motion passes. And we'll need a carrier for that bill. Representative Reschke might be best for this.
You miss a meeting. That's what happens.
This is a very common sense bill that adds water economy devices to the list of things that can be paid for from the residential PACE program, and it's a good idea. And I think we'll let him have his first bill on the floor out of this committee at least. Okay.
Remind me to show up.
At this time, I'm going to move on to our informational session on tax credit review. And Chris, come on up. And so, Chris, by way of maybe helping you refine your testimony, we may not get to House Bill 2072 today. And I don't have anybody signed up to talk about House Bill 2680, so I'm inclined to leave that till the end and as well, and we may not need any help on that one. But I don't want to interfere otherwise with your testimony, and thank you for being here to educate us a little bit more about these tax credit measures.
Sure. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Chris Alanak, Legislative Revenue Office. Basically, this process I've come to committees and talked about process that the legislature has kind of set up over the past few years. It does vary from session to session. It depends the discretion of the chair, the vice chairs, and the committee on how they want to handle that. So I thought I would just conceptually just a one-sentence statement on each of the tax credits and then the process. So basically, before you, I'm not sure I'm tracking the credit with the bill numbers you just referenced, but you have a residential energy tax credit, which is basically a tax credit for homeowners for various devices. You have a conservation tax credit, which is a credit for businesses who install various conservation devices. The credit there is 35% of the certified costs claimed over 5 years. It's a five-year tax credit. Then you have a biomass tax credit, which is a credit that varies depending on the type of material, and it's for the production or collection of the biomass. And then the fourth one you have is a little bit different. It's for renewable energy development contributions. It's a tax credit that is sold by auction. The Department of Revenue runs that. They communicate with the Department of Energy, and I believe it's once a year they sell tax credits in $500 increments. So anybody can buy those tax credits. So in OLIS, I believe there is the full tax credit report, which can be a bit daunting. It's about 150 pages long. I did also go into the report and pull out the relevant pages for the four tax credits. So that's a shorter document. That should be in there as well, so you can focus on that. Basically, it provides background information. And this is only the second such report created. It was the 13th legislature that required LRO to produce this report. And what it does is it goes through, there's a lot of context and background about tax expenditures and how they compare to the regular budget. For each of the tax credits, there's a policy purpose section, a description and revenue impact section, and then a policy analysis section, and then kind of an other section. And the starting point for an analysis of any tax credit really is the purpose. And so I've gone back through legislative history to try and discern what the policy purpose of the tax credit is. But now that these tax credits are before the committee, it's really at the discretion of the committee and the members to decide how much you want to get into the policy for the tax credits. It's basically a chance for the legislature to check in and to see if the tax credit is achieving the policy purpose that it was enacted for, possibly modifying that purpose or modifying the tax credit in any way that you would see fit. So you have RETC. It's available for a variety of different types of devices. You could decide that some devices are still working and some others aren't. You can change the incentive level. Similar with the biomass, it's available for different types of material. So it really depends on the workload for the committee for that process. And the idea was to step back from the revenue impact and evaluate it purely from a policy standpoint, make your decisions and recommendations, and then act on them accordingly, either send bills down to JTAX or not. And for anything you send down to JTAX, it can be modified to any extent that the committee deems necessary or not. And as all the policy committees do that, toward the end of the session, JTAX meets and we'll have a tax credit budget, if you will, and then act on that accordingly and make changes. But they really depend on the input from the policy committees. If other decisions, if there are budgetary restrictions, which is a gross oversimplification of this session. So that's really a high level, kind of a quick overview.
Thank you. Let me open it up now to the committee for questions for Chris. And I think if it would probably be appropriate while we have Chris, that if you have specific questions about specific tax credit programs, to go ahead and ask you.
Sure.
Questions from the committee.
And we are a resource at any other time too, as well.
So. Representative Wolf.
Yeah, thank you. On the alternative energy devices, on the RIP for residential energy, are those? You know, there's a lot of different, you know, tax credits for different appliances, obviously. So is it, I guess, the joint tax credit's expectation that we look at each of those items to determine if that's correct, or are those items adjusted and reviewed by the agency?
Chair Helm, Representative Holvey. It's really at the discretion of the committee on how in how much detail you'd like to get into that level. On the appliances, there was a significant change in 2011, and so a lot of the appliances became ineligible for the tax credit. So that was a change. And it really depends on, I mean, that's a very specific issue, and if the committee would like to look into that, it really is up to the members on the committee.
Follow up. So in 2011, were those changes made by the legislature or by the agency?
By the legislature. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Further questions from the committee? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Chris, I'm just looking at the, for instance, the list of appliances and so forth. Somebody may know, but is there a way to get into the weeds on which of these is utilized more than others and just what the attractiveness of from wood pellet stoves to wastewater heat recovery to on and on? Are there any of these, I guess, that aren't very attractive, aren't very, being utilized by citizens and some that are much more popular than others? It's just, at this point, it's just a dump of information, so it's hard to make value judgments, I guess, whether we need to just continue what we're doing or if it's the time to take a look at doing something differently.
Chair Helm, Vice Chair Johnson, that kind of work was done in 2011, but it was done offline, and we do have, the Department of Energy has very detailed information, okay. And they've shared that information.
Yeah, like 3 months.
And so I'm recalling several meetings in the LRO conference room with members of at the time it was the revenue committees and going through these things in a great amount of detail.
Follow up.
I
guess the thing then that would be most helpful, I guess, for me as we go through and one versus the other from this to the RETC to the biomass and stuff is what is the current utilization in the biennium and what are we actually authorizing going forward and potential expenditures to the general fund?
Neither the biomass nor the RETC have an overall program cap. Within RETC, there is a cap related to solar for, I think, builders. They can get a certain amount of tax credits. But overall, there aren't caps for those programs. There are caps for the renewable energy contributions, and that's $3 million a biennium. And the conservation credit, that's $28 million a biennium. The utilization on the auction credit has been, all of those have been sold, so that's mm-hmm. $3 million a biennium. The conservation credit hasn't approached the cap. In recent years. And the RETC is about $15 million a year, and the biomass is about $7 million a year. I'm obviously trying to do this off the top of my head.
Seven million.
Yeah. Further questions for Chris?
Representative Boone.
Since he's here, and I hope I didn't just miss this, do you have a total number of the tax credits? If they were all
that are sunsetting this,
yeah,
yes.
I didn't want to make you have to work.
I was just refreshing. It's about $30 million. If all of the tax credits that are scheduled for sunset were to be extended, the cost to extending that is about $30 million.
Oh, okay.
And RETC is the biggest one. It's about half of that.
Okay. Thanks.
I'm sorry. Although that $30 million, I guess a footnote to that is a 1 year cost. It's the cost for the 17-19 biennium. All of these tax credits sunset in the middle of the biennium. So.
So it'll be 60 next biennium.
Gotta
be careful with these things.
Representative Power.
Is that $30 million inclusive of the agency costs to run them, or is that just the cost of the tax credit?
This is just the tax credit, so it's the front end. It's the hit to the revenue stream.
Representative Holden.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Of the tax credits that don't have caps, have you seen projections of what the trends and what the costs of those tax credits could be going forward?
To some extent, I'm always talking to the agencies about that issue, about what they might be. And none of them seem to be having a runaway cost, but now that I've just said that, none of them are really focused on that. There's been a lot of change in recent years, and with the sunset, for example, the biomass tax credit has largely become a woody biomass and manure tax credit. There are several different materials that are eligible for a credit, but most of the cost is being driven in recent years by the manure tax credit. So some of the drivers there would be digesters that may or may not be coming online in the future. And the department, in this case Energy, may know about some of those ahead of time, but they don't necessarily know about all of them. And so it's something we look at, but usually I think the kind of event you're referring to are unexpected events, so they're hard to, by definition, hard to recognize.
Chris, thank you very much for being here. Do you plan to stick with us a little while?
I can hang out, yes.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. I appreciate it. And with that committee, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2681 and invite Representative Nose up. Representative Nose, did you want to invite anybody up here initially with you?
I know there are people in the room who are more knowledgeable about this than me. It probably just makes sense to have them come up after I'm
okay.
Done testifying, Mr. Chair, since I need to go back to health care. So for the record, Chair Helm and members of the committee, my name is Rob Nose. I'm the state representative for House District 42, which is inner southeast and a little sliver of northeast Portland. They don't like to be forgotten, so I try to mention them. Some of you know that I serve on the Revenue Committee, that I was a big supporter of Measure 97, and that in general I am skeptical about tax credits. And while our tax and budget and health care situation feels like one of the most pressing issues that we have here in Salem for the moment, probably the real pressing issue for all time is how are we going to deal with climate change for ourselves and for future generations. We know that our weather is changing because of all the carbon we have put in the air, and we have to make progress on reducing carbon emissions and reliance on fossil fuels and still have electricity to power and run our economy. Having a financial incentive to promote solar energy and energy efficiency in general helps. And one way to do that is to offer a tax credit to people to make the switch to these technologies. And that is what the residential energy tax credit does. Over the years, it's been a key driver of solar adoption and the spread of high efficiency energy technologies in our state. The RETC is popular because more and more Oregonians are wanting the energy independence and reliability that these products provide. They want to save money on their utility bills, and they view solar and energy efficiency as investments that they can make in the value of their homes. Many also want to do their part to help solve global warming and cut health-harming pollution. But make no mistakes, when Oregonians by the thousands are installing these products, it's also good for our state and our economy. The solar and energy efficiency industries provide exactly the kind of high-paying jobs we want to bring to our state. They attract private investment to Oregon, they make our energy grid more resilient and reliable, and they help our state meet its global warming goals. These are real and tangible benefits. It wasn't too long ago when a homeowner looking to install solar would have had a hard time finding a company to do it, and the RETC helped drive homeowners' demand for solar, which gave rise to solar companies and rise to jobs. All those companies grew, so did the economies of scale, which helps bring down the price for solar. If things keep going like they are, the solar industry, I believe, will be able to stand on its own in the near future. We will not need these incentives, and I think that day is coming soon. That's the story that the RETC's created, a marketplace for solar where none existed. But for now, I think the RETC is still necessary. Solar remains an emerging industry that still needs an incentive to help homeowners install solar for their use. And for all these reasons, I hope this committee will pass this bill. And I know that there are folks here who are prepared to talk about what's happened in other states where they phased out this tax credit too quickly. Now, my only caveat about all this, members of the committee, is that extending this tax credit really relies on fixing the revenue problem that we have in our state with regard to our budget gap. As is the case with a lot of other things around here, we need to have some sort of tax reform to be able to afford this very important program. If given all that, we decide to do things to make the rent seem more affordable, I think we're best off then sending this to the Joint Tax Credit Committee, and I hope the committee will pass out a clean bill for us to work on in that process, which I see Representative Bentz and Chair Barnhart, so, you know, and Representative Johnson will be struggling to figure this out.
Thank you. Any questions for Representative Nose?
I'm going to get let off easy.
Looks like it.
Really? All right, that's good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for being here, Representative Nose. At this time, I'm going to invite up Sean Franks, Jeff Bissonette, and Shannon Souza. And we have a substantial list of folks wanting to testify, and I'm going to see how we do. I may end up putting folks on the clock for 3 minutes later on in the hearing, but I want to get these experts on the record first. So go ahead when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jeff Bissonette, representing the Oregon Solar Energy Industries Association, OSEA. We are the trade association for the solar industry in the state, with 90 member businesses representing all aspects of the solar industry. Thank you for the opportunity to come and talk to you about House Bill 2681 and the RETC. The RETC is a personal income tax for home installation of an energy-saving device. I'm kind of in a situation where I'm talking both about solar and about energy efficiency, and able to kind of get down into the details because of past sorted life on energy issues, and so I can talk a little bit about both. But there are efficiency businesses in the audience that can talk about their individual experience. RETC, since starting operations in 1978, has provided over 570,000 tax credits with a value of more than $172 million on a variety of energy-efficient appliances, which have changed over the years, as well as home solar systems. The Legislative Revenue Office report number 2-17, released this February, notes that the statute doesn't specifically identify a policy purpose for this incentive, but it does say we can infer some purposes from the discussion around the implementing legislation, specifically dealing with the rising cost of fossil fuels, energy conservation, and the economic feasibility of alternative forms of energy. The report also lists discussion in 2015 by Department of Energy to this committee, talking about the purpose of this credit is to promote energy savings or energy displacement and market transformation. And so the LRO report concludes that, taken together, a reasonable inference is that the tax credit has the dual purpose of reducing the consumption of fossil fuels while expanding the demand for non-conventional energy resources. And I'll come back to having that purpose more plainly spelled out in statute in a moment. What's the program done? Again, $172 million in tax credits, energy saved, enough for 400,000 homes for a year, carbon reductions of at least 1 million metric tons, but probably more, but we don't really track that. Something else I'll get back to. Very strong job creation record, which is something you're going to hear a lot about. Representative Nose also noted the benefits that the state has seen in a tangible way for the RETC. We also note that there are a wide variety of studies that show that the return on investment for tax credits like the RETC is large. For example, in New Mexico, economists found that for every dollar in state spending on tax expenditures yielded $5 in new labor income. Closer to home, a Washington State study of clean energy incentives found that each dollar yields about $6.82 in in-state payroll and nearly $16 in purchases from local installers, manufacturers, and suppliers. That really is a terrific multiplier and has a real economic impact. We're here, both the energy efficiency community and the solar community, asking for an extension of the RETC and for a full extension of 6 years. Oregon has a reputation of being a very stable place to do both energy efficiency and solar business. Our businesses need stable policies above all else in which to plan and do business. And you know, a variety of different websites rank Oregon as very high and one of the 9 A-graded states, particularly for solar policy in 2017. We need to continue to create more clean energy jobs, promote further energy savings, reduce Oregon's greenhouse gas emissions, reduce risk for electricity ratepayers, boost solar adoption, and really the RETC is the only statewide incentive available to people not only in the service territories of private utilities, but outside in public utility territories as well. You're going to hear a lot from different folks today about what will happen if the RETC goes away and the real impact on businesses, on homeowners, and on communities. I will just take a couple of moments to say that if the RETC, you know, when we look at other states that have changed incentives, particularly in the solar industry, things change very rapidly. We only have to look a little bit north of our border in Washington State. They saw an incentive there change in 2015. In one of our members that works on both sides, their business went from 70% Washington and 30% Oregon to exactly, that was in 2015, to exactly the reverse in 2016. And in 2017, they expect to do more than 90% of their business in Oregon simply because the industry in Washington has dried up. Another member that has a more statewide profile in Washington with the same incentive change was forced to lay off 20% of their workforce and canceled expansion plans to other parts of Washington. They did come to Oregon because, again, of Oregon's stable nature, but they are watching RETC developments very carefully. We've had a lot of conversation about how to, in the words of one of our work group members, make the RETC more awesomer, and I think that's a technical term. And we think that we need to be more explicit about what we expect the program to do. We believe that this committee, as it examines the policy behind the RETC, needs to establish some clear principles around which the program should be managed and also establish clear metrics by which the program can be evaluated. We are working with legislative counsel to put those intentions into legislative language, and we look forward to bringing you that amendments at a later date. But some of the things that we're looking at is to really spell out that the program should operate with transparency, with accountability, to make sure we incent behavior change, and to make sure that we are maintain a statewide and coordinated incentive. In terms of the metrics, which is, I think, particularly important and one of the things that we've heard loud and clear both from folks who administer the program and from legislators, is that we can't tell if we're doing a good job or not. And so some of the metrics that we've suggested and, again, are working to put into legislative language is to measure the amount of energy efficiency that is required, that is acquired, the amount of renewable energy that's generated, the amount of greenhouse gas emissions that are reduced, the number of jobs that are created, to establish a model to determine overall economic impact, and to also make sure that the credit is basically being made available across the economic spectrum in Oregon and not just to high-earning households. In addition, we would suggest that maybe a name change might be in order. From what we say or what we hear from legislative councils, that's not done in statute, but can be done by the administering agency. So perhaps a strong suggestion from the legislature on change could be made, just to separate it from other tax credit programs that have had you know, many more problems than this one has, and other ones that are now defunct. I'll just say that we'll note that there's a series of policy questions presented in Appendix C of the LRO report that I talked about earlier. We'll be providing detailed answers to those questions as the committee continues their deliberation around the RUTC, but you're getting a flavor of what our responses are here. I'm happy to answer questions at the appropriate time. Thanks.
Thank you, Jim. Let's finish the panel and we'll see if there's questions.
Chair Helm, members of the committee, thank you for your time. My name is Sean Franks, and I live at 321 Angle Street in Ashland, Oregon. I'm here representing True South Solar. I'm here today in support of House Bill 2681, the extension of the Residential Energy Tax Credit, the RETC. True South Solar operates in Jackson and Josephine County of Southern Oregon. The company was started in 2010 by two local installers who had been in the industry together since 2003. Today, the company has grown to over 17 employees and had over $4 million in revenue last year. The team installed over 140 jobs, and we were just 65 kilowatts of meeting our goal of installing 1 megawatt in our region. 85% of those installations were residential installations that actually were eligible for the RETC. As inside sales and marketing staff at True South Solar, I take incoming calls for homeowners that are interested in going solar and set them up with free consultations to determine the feasibility of their home. The mission of True South Solar is solar on every rooftop and best jobs ever. And the RETC is essential to that mission. It brings real value to our communities by attracting additional resources through federal and utility incentives and creates living wage jobs, living wage and clean energy jobs. And it absolutely helps homeowners save money and energy. The RETC is crucial to many of our customers in obtaining solar, and allowing the RETC to sunset would fundamentally change the residential solar industry of Oregon. Solar would be kept out of reach of hardworking Oregonians, making solar accessible only to the rich and wealthy. I fear if this policy is allowed to sunset, the payback on solar would extend well beyond 10 years, which would mean reduced installations for our company, resulting in layoffs of not only our installation crew, but also office staff as well. I drove up the four-hour drive and plan to drive 4 hours back to my family tonight just to ask you to please extend the residential energy tax credit and save the thriving residential solar industry of Oregon. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you.
Chair Helm and committee members, thank you for your time on this. My name is Shannon Souza. I'm a 22-year resident of Coos County out on the coast. I'm also a professional engineer in the state of Oregon and the principal of Soul Coast Companies. We have a combined mission of supporting strategic growth, responsible development, and sustainable living on the Oregon coast. Since 2004, when our energy division was launched, we have developed the scope of all of its offerings, earned certifications, invested in specialized equipment, and trained ourselves and employees specifically to meet the technical requirements of the RETC and utility incentive programs. Our energy division has spent over $9.7 million in Coos County. Through material purchases and payroll, we were able to hire skilled tradesmen laid off during the recession. We've invested over $25,000 in local science, art, and educational programming in our public schools. And we've supported the continued existence of local electrical and plumbing supply houses during the recession, which are critical to our construction industry. In our experience, the RETC has enabled rural Oregonians to invest in the infrastructure of America. They've reduced transmission losses through the reduction in imported power. They've taken critical steps toward potentially life-saving emergency power supplies during prolonged utility outages. Our residential energy clients vary in socioeconomic profile. They're from bakers to bankers, loggers to lawyers, fishermen to physical therapists, and widows to winemakers, and I've met all of them. While one in five of our clients have ready access to funds, many clients save for several years or use home equity loans to finance their energy projects. Regardless of this diversity, all of our residential energy clients use the RETSI, and three out of four of those systems that are system sizes are selected specifically to max out the RETSI solar. Increasingly, battery backup, which when paired with a solar electric system is eligible for the federal tax credit, has been included in that scope of work. In coastal Oregon, we are not strangers to storm and mudslide-induced prolonged utility outages, nor is the path to recovery from a seismic or tsunami event ever far from our minds. All of the residential solar systems we now install include an emergency outlet sized for daytime charging of communication devices during a utility outage. Should the RETSI sunset, we project that our residential energy market will be declining by about 90%. As a result, we would not hire a new project manager, which we've put on hold to watch how the RETSI folds out. We would likely eliminate our sales staff, and I would take that back over myself. And our skilled laborers and union electricians installing our solar would drop by about 1.5 FTEs. We've installed over 0.5 megawatt of RETSI-based energy efficiency and generation projects on the coast of Oregon. We're saving coastal families about $60,000 a year. We have leveraged over $30,000 in RETSI funds toward an additional $420,000 in utility incentives and an additional $550,000 in federal tax credits. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for this panel? Representative Johnson. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jeff, the cost of solar, according to what I'm staring at here, has dropped from $9 a watt to $4 a watt over the past 10 years, 2006 to 2016. Given that reduction in the cost of the system, should we reduce the credit from the $4,000, $6,000 by like amount per house?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bentz, the way the program works is that the $6,000 is the maximum or 50% of project cost, whichever is less. Also, some of the changes that Mr. Alanak talked about that were made in 2011, one of them was to allow the agency to reduce the amount of the incentive that's given, and basically to maximize the amount of the system. So all of that means, we could do that, but we already have kind of controls in place that if somebody doesn't need $6,000, they won't get $6,000 because they might not need that whole amount. But for somebody that, for whatever purpose they're putting in a solar system, they can sort of right-size the system, and we can keep control on the cost to the state. So I guess, what I'm saying is we have the flexibility without having to reduce the maximum amount of the credit.
Follow up. Thank you. Shifting topics for just a moment. You mentioned that this is good for the environment because there's a shift away from fossil fuels, but we have this new coal to clean bill that just got passed. So if we're not worried about that anymore, and since half of Oregon's energy is already hydro, I'm not sure that belongs on that list of justifications. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bentz, I think what the RETSI allows people to do is to not depend on their utility, but to be sort of part of the solution themselves. Also, depending on your utility, you have, if you live, say, in Pacific Power Territory, by 2040, your power will be 50% renewable. We don't know where that other 50% comes from. It won't necessarily be from hydro, which is, I think, the point you're trying to make. And so this is, if somebody wants to say, no, I want to do better than the 50%, I want to have all of my power covered by renewable energy, the RETSI gives them the tools to do that if that's the choice they want to make.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Jeff, one of the other questions that, you know, we've heard frequently this session as we talk about tax credits and so forth is means testing. You know, I think folks in some areas have concerns, valid or not, that, you know, we're providing too much support for folks that perhaps, you know, it could be said don't need it, or maybe they're going to go ahead and do what they want to do anyway, but we're just giving them an extra boost and so forth. And, you know, if you talk about the price tag for these, you know, we recognize these are general fund dollars that could just as well end up in the state school fund too. So going forward, do you have any suggestions, I guess, on what we might do to ensure that we're not simply paying for folks in Lake Oswego to add solar panels at the expense of school kids in Beaverton? Is the industry willing to have a conversation about that? Is there any conversations about, you know, making sure we get the renewable resources to where folks have a legitimate interest in it but can't afford it, and we're not subsidizing those who could afford it and but still want to have, they could pay, use their own nickel to get there. Does that make sense?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, it does make sense, and yes, we are willing to have that conversation. And I will note that there is research done by the Green Energy Institute that showed that between 2013 and 2015, a third of the projects, the renewable energy projects from the RETC, were located in zip codes with median incomes below the statewide median income. And so I think that we're already on that path. To reinforce that path, you know, if this committee decides that this is a good policy to send forward into the money discussion, as part of that money discussion, you know, one of the things that we've talked about along with our energy efficiency allies is, you know, either capping the system at a certain level, or providing a lower incentive to higher income households. We've also talked about one of the points that have been made in several reports. I believe the LRO report made it. I think a report from Department of Administrative Services noted that perhaps having a refundable credit could increase the equity. So there's a couple of tools that are definitely on the table that, again, if this committee chooses to push this to that money discussion, and we certainly urge you to do that, those sorts of topics would be on the table.
Okay, great.
Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jeff, thanks a lot for your work in the energy area for quite some time. You know, I've been a huge supporter of solar and continue to be. However, I know you're aware the governor has recommended allowing this tax credit to sunset. And I think largely it is because there's not a lot of parameters of when have we achieved our goal. And so I'm happy to hear you're working on those amendments as well. But as others may have commented, you know, I think one of the concerns is the money. You know, when I'm looking at statistics, it looks like the RETC tax credits issued in 2012 were around $9 million. And in 2015, they were almost $22 million. And, you know, which sort of gives some of us a little bit of pause about, you know, we don't have a cap on this thing. You know, it's achieving a great goal. I recognize the industry and the benefits from the economy that this RETC's helped create. You know, and I think, you know, we, as you know, our Joint Oversight Committee recommended a 2-year sunset so we could get a handle on largely when have we achieved the goal, or when has this tax credit achieved its goal, and how do we, put some sort of cap on it so we have a little certainty over our budgets. I think that's, you know, something that we need to address. So I appreciate that you're working on amendments, and I'm anxious to see what they look like. Because extending it for 6 years, when I'm looking at a price tag that's going from 9 to 22 in 3 years or 4 years, million. I'm sort of a little nervous about what the next 4 years might look like.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey, I appreciate that. I think that, what we've been hearing, both what the governor has said and what legislators have been saying, I think to the governor's credit, what she also said is that she still does believe that the transition to a clean energy economy and addressing climate change still is worthy of state support, and then sort of turn that discussion over to the legislature to have, and now that's the discussion we're having. I do think that it's important to note that not that long ago, the RETC in the on the solar side was doing was installing much smaller systems, about half the size of the system. Now we're installing about an average of a 6 kilowatt system for not that much, for a lower cost, and so that state money is going further. I think as we look at different options of making sure that the legislature feels like they have control over the amount that's going out for both solar and for efficiency, that's important. We have to make sure that we don't kind of have something that kind of comes back and bites us. For instance, a cap sort of does create kind of a gold rush mentality. It's like, oh, we better, get it. And it's hard to sort of plan businesses, hard to plan projects around that. But we are coming up with tools to go after exactly that level of control. And so we want to make sure that, we can maintain Oregon's reputation as a stable business environment to do both energy efficiency and solar, that we can give the businesses the opportunity to plan. That's kind of one of the hard spots about a two-year extension. Is that okay? It's we start and then we stop again, and we just can't have that planning running room. And then finally, particularly with efficiency, there's a lot of opportunity cost. Efficiency is always the least cost resource. The dynamic between efficiency and solar is very different. There will be a day, I'm not willing to testify what that day will be, but there is a day that we won't need that incentive. And frankly, to force that conversation in the industry, one of the things that you might want to ask us to do is come back on it every couple of years and report to you and see if we can identify that that date. On the efficiency side, though, if we don't acquire that cheapest resource, that's kind of lost opportunity and money literally left on the table. And so we have to make sure we can kind of balance all of that, and that is the conversation that we hope to have in the revenue side.
Thank you all for coming and testifying today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Next, I'm going to call up Jim Walls and Robert Westerman and John Erickson. And while those folks are coming up, I'm going to do a couple of things here. There are folks that have signed up to also testify on a couple other bills, and so as well as 2681. So I'm going to open up some public hearings on those bills too, so that they can do double duty. So at this time, I'm also opening a public hearing on House Bill 2760 and House Bill 2074. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2680. And because nobody has signed up to testify on House Bill 2680, I'm also going to close the public hearing on that.
Mr. Chair, I would note there is a letter in the in OLIS on that, but that letter was in opposition to the bill.
Okay.
So that's testimony, but not in support.
I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2680. Get that off our plate. Okay. Thank you. And Jim, I'm going to let you go first in case you run ahead home tonight. Although you might only get halfway there.
Thank you, Chair Helm. No, I'll plan on staying tonight. I'm a better night morning person than I am a night person. So, Chairman Helm and committee members, it's an honor to be here to testify on RETC today. Many of you heard my testimony about renewables last night, so I won't recover all that and cut this very short and to the point. In Lake County, we have a goal of being a net exporter of renewable energy, and we help a lot of homes and businesses and ranches install renewable energy. We are a county without natural gas, so we don't have that cheap option there. And many of the heating sources within our county are either wood or fuel oil. And in Lakeview, we're under restriction because of the inversion of wood smoke against the mountains every cold winter, and it was a long cold one this winter. And with that inversion, those restrictions, we've tried to deal locally with solving that problem. We've implemented several things locally, including weatherization and energy efficiencies to minimize the time woods burned. We provided tax and local tax incentives for installation of alternative energy. We've amended development codes to encourage alternative energy use and other than wood. And when building or remodeling over a certain cost, we require that you remove your uncertified stove and put in a certified stove or use renewable energy. And the RETSI has helped that. Richard Gardner, a PhD economist, did a study for the Ford Family Foundation. I should have said in the beginning, I'm with Lake County Resources Initiative, nonprofit, also a board member of the South Central Oregon Economic District that runs the stove program. And with that, with those, with the study that Gardner did on 22 homes, businesses, and ranches, those 22 are saving and this was 2011, 1.9 million over the life of the implementation of the renewables they did. And that was ground source heat pump, solar, house electrical, solar hot water heater. It was the realm all the way around. We do everything but ocean wave in Lake County. And so it covered all that thing. That was an average of a yearly savings of $125,000 for those two. Now, several of them received RETSI, and Mr. Gardner did not do a study of RETSI or non-RETSI, but several I know did. And that helped encourage them to install those renewables in there. And with that, you know, when you look at the total thing that we've done in Lake County with utility, renewables, and household, we're saving over 89,000 tons of carbon when you want to talk climate change. And we have developed a plan, and we're rural, remote, low population, of saving 93% through renewables. And as I testified in Cap and Trade, you had the cross-laminated timber and the amount it saves over concrete and steel. Those savings are going to be tremendous, and we will do that economically. And I think that's an important part. But the RETSI is a big player. I am a Republican. I think foremost I'm an Oregonian, not by party, but an Oregonian mostly. And I think the RETSI has been good for this state. I heard the amendments on the committee before. I could endorse those amendments. I think they're good common sense things that they're talking about doing with the cap and making sure that the RETSI gets to the right economic level and stuff. So I support all that. And I thank you for the opportunity to testify here.
Good. Jim, I forgot to ask you to put your full name on the record.
Oh, Jim Walls, Executive Director of Lake County Resources Initiative.
Thank you. Go right ahead, whoever's ready next.
Thank you, Chairman Helm, committee members. My name is Robert Westerman. I'm the business manager for International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local Union 932, which has the jurisdiction along the Oregon coast from Lincoln City to the California border. Previous testimony was given about from Shannon Souza with SoCoast, based out of Coos Bay, about how that the RETSI tax credit provided much-needed jobs. And I want to speak to that a little bit. In 2008, when we saw the recession come in about 3 months, we went from full employment along the coast to about 50% unemployed. And that lasted, and it's still going on now. Thankfully, Oregon's seen an economic recovery that seems to have been regional in some areas like Prineville and Boardman and the Portland metropolitan area. We haven't seen a recovery so much on the Oregon coast. We're still struggling to get back to the level of employment that we had prior to the 2008 recession. During that time, though, when we had 50% unemployment on the coast, there wasn't jobs for our members to travel to. I mean, it hit the entire country and just shut us down. But the few jobs that we were able to get were solar installs in Coos County. And we were able to keep a lot of our members home doing that work. And we've expanded that. We've been training our members for that work, and we're now doing it in Lincoln County as well as Coos County. So we're training people for this work going forward. The RETC credit provides a much-needed economic push for this industry and for work down there in the Oregon coast and elsewhere throughout Oregon. I think that one of the things that I'm sorry, I had a long drive over here, and I'm a little rummy from sitting and listening. But I am here to support the RETC tax credit extension. I think it provides a lot of jobs in my jurisdiction and throughout Oregon that wouldn't be there if this tax credit didn't exist. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Helm and members of the committee, for the opportunity to speak today. My name is John Erickson. I work for a HVAC wholesaler in Oregon called Gensco. We have 8 locations in Oregon, and I'm just here to speak on the behalf of kind of the wholesaler's perspective, working with the manufacturers for a lot of these energy-efficient products. We actually work a lot with manufacturers. We use these energy tax credits kind of as targets for high efficient products. A lot of times manufacturers will make products that will meet minimums to code, and we actually use these energy tax credits to figure out what products we're going to bring in to the state to help contractors push these high efficient products to consumers. Consumers use these tax credits to kind of validate new technologies. So without the residential energy tax credit, I think it would actually limit consumers' choices at the end of the day, because I think that without that guidance of what products to bring into the market, we might just, you know, move more towards the most lowest common denominator, the code. One thing, I don't know if it's an intended consequence of this or not, but the consumers definitely look to these tax credits to validate new technologies. I look at a product like the tankless water heater, which when it had a substantial rebate, we had really good sales with that product. When that tax credit went away, even though it was just as efficient as it was the day before the tax credit went away, the sales on that product dropped, and I believe it was because the perceived efficiency because of the tax credits, that was kind of the what people use. So that was just kind of the at least wanted to see that point of view of the RETC. So thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate your testimony. Next, I'm going to call Jed Jorgensen and Hannah Cruz up, and then Robert Hammerly as well. And I'll just note that Jed and Hannah are here from the Energy Trust of Oregon to provide information. They've marked themselves as neutral testifiers. And whoever's ready to go can go first.
Okay. Chair Helm, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. My name is Robert Hammerly. I'm the founder and principal at Greensavers. We're a home performance contractor with offices in Bend, Oregon and Portland, Oregon. Currently, we employ about 35 people across Oregon. Our clients use the RETC on about 30% of our jobs. The average dollar amount is averaged somewhere around $600. And like most Oregonians, our clients have to make decisions on where to invest limited resources. And the RETC helps Oregonians make good decisions. It helps Oregonians take a longer-term view and get away from the cheapest option today mentality. I believe that when Oregonians take this long view, it's good for their pocketbooks over the long run, but it's also good for the whole community because it reduces carbon emissions and makes us as a state use our resources more efficiently. Because we know that the RETC is so helpful in encouraging Oregonians to make good decisions, we also know that without the RETC, these highly efficient heating and cooling and ventilation systems would be harder to sell. And when they're harder to sell, there's an impact at our business, which would result in less hiring and maybe even laying off of people and not being able to provide as many solid living wage jobs. There's also a reduction in the societal benefit, once again related to efficient use of resources and climate change goals. So thus, I really encourage the committee to extend the RETC program. Thank you.
Thank you. Great. Go right ahead. I'll just note, folks, I've got 9 or 10 people that still want to testify on all of these bills, and we got about 30 minutes. So I'm hoping folks will keep their comments to about 3 minutes from here on out. If you can do that, I appreciate it. And I think we'll get Beth to help you out with a timer here as we go along. So go right ahead.
Great. Good afternoon, Chair Helm and members of the committee. For the record, I am Hannah Cruz with Energy Trust of Oregon. Energy Trust is a nonprofit organization delivering energy efficiency and small-scale renewable energy services and incentives to 1.6 million customers of Portland General Electric, Pacific Power, Northwest Natural, Cascade Natural Gas, and Avista. As you can see on this slide here, this is our territory map, and it is showing the territories of those 5 utilities. So Energy Trust covers some but not all of the state. In 15 years of serving customers, we have helped save and generate 600 average megawatts of electricity, 45 million annual therms of natural gas, and have saved customers $2.3 billion on their utility bills. Pursuant to our grant agreement with the Oregon Public Utility Commission, Energy Trust takes no position on the legislation before the committee, and we do hope this information is helpful for you in your deliberations. The Oregon Public Utility Commission authorizes Energy Trust to deliver energy efficiency and small-scale renewable programs. So I'll be discussing impacts of the expiration of the residential energy tax credit on our efficiency programs, and my colleague Jed Jorgensen will discuss the implications on our solar program. Both programs do interact with the Oregon residential energy tax credit, but in different ways. So on the efficiency side, our mandate is to save energy cost effectively at a lower cost than utilities would otherwise provide it. To determine whether any one energy efficient improvement is cost effective, whether it's a heating system or a water heater or a light bulb, we're required to use cost effectiveness tests to ensure that the benefits outweigh the cost to the customer. And when we evaluate those costs and determining whether an incentive can be provided to lower that upfront cost to a customer installing the equipment, we do factor in the availability of the residential energy tax credit. So when the residential energy tax credit expires, the cost side of our calculation will increase. But since the benefits stay the same, what will happen is some measures that we provide incentives for may no longer become cost effective. Therefore, Energy Trust would be unable to provide a cash incentive. Our initial analysis showed about 6 major measures that would be impacted by the expiration of the tax credit, and those in bold would be the most impacted. To show you a quick example of what a consumer would see when the residential energy tax credit expires around next year, you can see that a typical ductless heat pump project costs about $4,600 to install. The residential energy tax credit is a maximum of $1,300. Energy Trust currently offers an $800 cash incentive, leaving about $2,500 for the homeowner to pay out of pocket. So limiting the tax credit would bring that back up. And then if the cost effectiveness were to be, would no longer meet, if the project was no longer to meet our cost effectiveness test, the Energy Trust incentive wouldn't be provided, and the homeowner would be responsible for the $4,600 project cost. This slide here just shows you over time, over the past about 7 years, the activity level that we've seen from homeowners in Oregon. And you can see on the red or orange line, which is at the top, that's the ductless heat pump example I've been talking about. And you can see the popularity of that measure. About 1,830 projects were completed last year, and we anticipate 2,200 in this year. Accurately predicting the overall potential decrease in homeowners installing efficient equipment is hard to do. However, if the cost effectiveness were to no longer if we were no longer to meet our cost effectiveness requirements with the Public Utility Commission, we anticipate the 2,200 projects we're forecasting for this year. If they were not to go forward, we would be delivering, just from this one measure, 4% fewer savings for our entire residential portfolio. And as you saw earlier, there are about six major measures that could potentially be impacted with the expiration of the tax credit. With that, I'd like to turn it over to my colleague, Jed.
Thanks, Hannah. Chair Helm, members of the committee, I'm Jed Jorgensen with Energy Trust. Hannah talked about the efficiency side impacts, and which is really the vast majority of what we do at Energy Trust. I'm going to talk about a piece of the much smaller slice that makes up our renewable energy work. Within our renewable energy sector, Energy Trust provides incentives for residential solar projects as part of our larger goal of creating a vigorous and sustainable market for solar in Oregon, and that's one that we believe will ultimately thrive without incentives. Our program is designed around incentives that are managed in response to market behaviors, and they're capped at what we call the above-market cost of a project. Above-market cost is defined as the difference between the total cost of a project and the value of the power that it generates over its life. We also create and enforce quality standards. We aid the solar industry to drive down non-hardware soft costs, and we ensure a robust and qualified installer base. At present, there are 55 active residential solar trade alley companies in Energy Trust service territory, and that includes folks like True South and Soul Coast that you heard from earlier. In 2016, these trade ally companies installed solar on 1,600 homes, with enough annual energy combined to fully power about half of those homes. Costs for solar, as Representative Bentz noted, have definitely come down over time, and the number of residential solar systems installed each year has increased, along with the size of the systems that are being installed. And nearly all of the residential customers that receive an incentive from Energy Trust also receive or avail themselves of the residential energy tax credit. When we look at the changes in solar costs, they're also reflected in the incentives that Energy Trust and the Residential Energy Tax Credit have provided to homeowners. This chart shows how incentives and costs stacked up for an average system that was installed last year. In 2016, the average size of a residential solar system was 6 kilowatts. Trade ally companies sold those systems for an average of just about $3.81 per kilowatt, and the average total system cost was right around $23,000. Over time, the state-managed residential energy tax credit has made periodic adjustments to the amount of funding provided to the average applicant, and those changes over time to both system costs and the residential energy tax credit have reduced the remaining above-market costs that for which Energy Trust can provide an incentive. So Energy Trust steps down its residential solar incentives as well to ensure that we're not paying more than the above-market cost. And that speaks a little bit to what Representative Holvey was getting at in terms of trends, as well as Representative Bentz earlier. The funding that is coming both from Energy Trust and the Residential Energy Tax Credit is going much further than it was just a few years ago. So what will happen if the tax credit expires as scheduled? Without the tax credit, the total remaining above market cost for solar will increase. If Energy Trust were to raise its incentives to cover more of that above market cost, it would significantly reduce the total number of systems that we could support. On the other hand, if the customer has to cover that increase, we would expect fewer homeowners to move forward with installations. So in either case, without other changes in the market, Energy Trust would expect to see a reduction in the total number of projects that are installed each year. And if fewer projects are being installed, we would also expect to see trade ally contractors leave the market because the volume of business will go down. We've come to that conclusion based on market contractions that have occurred in other states when they reduced or eliminated solar tax credits or other incentives. In Louisiana, as this chart shows, the end of the state tax credit for solar at the end of 2015 led to a sharp decline in solar installations, and we have seen similar results in other states as well. So with that, thank you, Chair Helm, and members of the committee for the invitation to provide information about these potential impacts, and both Hannah and I are happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for this panel?
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Thank you to Pan and Jed for being here. So you had your slide about the on the residential piece. You talk about kilowatt or price per kilowatt and so forth. But could you just run through in a general sense the cost, pick a number, cost per system, what's an average cost for an install, how much of that is subsidized or with federal tax credits, ETO, and the RETC, and how much is left, I guess, on a percentage basis for the owner to actually have to pay out of pocket? Is it about 25%? Is it more than that? I mean, in general terms?
Chair Helm, Representative Johnson. Yes, as you can see in that slide there, I think it is right around, and I don't know the percentage off the top of my head, but the math could be done with those numbers. It's probably right around 75% or so. The residential energy tax credit is about 25% of that.
Follow. And I guess my point would be that there's quite a bit of help out there, obviously, for folks, which gets back to my initial point I made earlier, in that not quibbling with the benefit or to the industry and so forth, but the payback period on this, if you're going to factor in the net metering benefit as well, is pretty quick, right? You're almost in a positive cash flow situation in certain situations relatively quickly. And again, not a bad thing necessarily, but do we need to be subsidizing folks? I'll get back to Lake Oswego again. So they have a net positive cash flow on a system that is 75% of which is subsidized via either state or federal programs. And that's kind of the question that I and other, I guess, others are wrestling with as we talk about this issue.
Chair Helm, Vice Chair Johnson, my understanding for this average system that was installed last year is that it has a payback, and again, that's a 6-kilowatt system, that it has a payback of around 10 years. And if the residential energy tax credit were to go away and that cost were to be put onto the customer installing the system, that would go to about a 20-year payback.
One follow-up, then I'll go to Rep. Betts.
And there are third-party folks that will come out and just do all this for the homeowner as well, right? Where they actually, they process it, they own the system, they take the credits, and then they actually would be the owner going forth, correct?
Chair Helm, Vice Chair Johnson, that was the case for a time in Oregon. As of this fall, however, both of the companies that were offering third-party owned systems left the state of Oregon, and so that is not a market option at this time.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And is it the goal of the trust to achieve energy efficiency or to assist the environment or both? When I look at this chart up here, is that, do you factor both of those things in calculating the return on this type of investment of these public funds?
Chair Helm, Representative Benz, thank you for the question. Pursuant to our founding legislation, Energy Trust has two missions, energy efficiency acquisition, which must be cost-effective energy. It has to be cheaper than a utility would otherwise provide, even in today's low natural gas prices. On the renewable energy side, which is a separate fund, it's the flip of that, and it is lowering the above-market cost of the system. So our mission really is to promote both, to achieve cost-effective efficiency and to lower the above-market cost of renewable energy. Once a solar system or a technology does come down in cost, and if there were no above-market costs, Energy Trust would no longer provide an incentive to support the homeowner or the business in installing such a system.
It seemed to me that when our focus is on solar, one of the really inexpensive alternatives is natural gas. And for a long time, perhaps even now, it's still least expensive. So there must be something going on that has something to do with the environment, not just these formulas that we choose to apply. But am I missing something? Because the formulas that you just suggested I think you mentioned renewable in there someplace. I'm wondering why, if we're all we're interested in is price.
Chair Helm and Representative Benz, thank you again for the question. And it really does come back to our founding legislation, which requires our investment in cost-effective energy efficiency, conservation, and market transformation, and in addition to lower the cost of renewable energy technologies, including solar, wind, hydropower, geothermal, and biopower. So, you know, our goal really is cost-effective efficiency for that portion of our mission, and on renewable energy, it is to lower those costs.
Thank you.
Thank you, panel. Appreciate you being here today. Thank you. Next, I'm going to call John Patterson, and then Jerry Page, and Jeremy Anderson, and I think, and Paul, you wanted to come too, maybe we can drag a fourth chair up there for you. And again, we're getting tight for time, so I'm putting everybody on the clock for 3 minutes. Go right ahead, first person that's ready.
Chair Helm and members of the committee, my name is John Patterson. I'm an old-time solar guy in the state of Oregon. I started Mr. Sun Solar in 1980, been through lots of sessions like this over the years. And I'm very grateful to Representative Bentz and Representative Johnson to see them again, because in 2015 you helped me get a solar water heating incentive through that has really been very, very helpful. And of course, that whole incentive rests under the RETC program. If the RETC is not renewed, that benefit disappears instantly, because without the tax credit, there's no chance of doing solar or hot water in the state. I've also accepted a position at Clackamas Community College, teaching their renewable energy program. I have 10 students signed up for this next term that want to learn about solar thermal. So your bill from 2015 is helping to build the infrastructure to reestablish the solar thermal industry in the state, and get the support that needs for the 25,000 solar thermal systems that have been installed since 1980. So I'm very strongly in favor of these two bills. I've seen the federal tax credit come and go. I've seen incentives go up and down, and it seems that the market just goes with the incentives. This last slide the Energy Trust had was very helpful. You could say, in one sense, that if the 99 cents per watt disappeared for the state incentive, all that would need to be compensated for is for the cost of incentives to go down 99 cents per watt, and the same net cost to the homeowner would be there. But it doesn't really work like that. It's like if the incentives are there, that helps the people make the decision. It's like if our state is behind it, it just helps to make the decision for the home buyer. So I think it's an important thing to renew, and I would definitely say 6 years is the time we need to have that renewed.
Thank you. Go right ahead.
Chair Helm, committee members, my name is Jeremy Anderson. I represent WISE. We are a trade association of weatherization contractors, distributors, and manufacturers. And I'm here today to speak both to the RETC and EIP bills for 2074. So RETC first. You know, we've heard a lot about what RETC does for people in the industry, but I spend a lot of time in people's homes and see what it does for homeowners. Let me tell you the most typical RETC situation I see. This is a small, usually 1,000-square-foot thereabouts house, older, here in the valley, usually heated by zonal electric heat, which is the least efficient heating system known to man for the most part. These are people who often spend, say, $300 to $500 a month in their winter heating costs. What RETC allows is the chance for those homeowners to install something like a ductless heat pump. It might reduce that cost by 60, 70, even more percent. This gives them the chance to get out of the trap of high heat bills. It has a nice side benefit. It does great things for the economy, does great things for the efficiency the ability to use energy efficiently in our state, and it's great for the environment as well. Now, a couple of points on means testing. Usually we see these on very small, older houses. These are people who don't have great means. And as far as when we're done and the incentives are what they should be, the Department of Energy holds rulemaking annually, and they are extremely aggressive in moving the tax credit program forward. They are constantly reducing incentives for well-known and well-proven technologies that are taking off, introducing new incentives for newer technologies. Just this last go-around for tax credits, we lost, well, for duct sealing, which is one of the other most cost-effective technologies out there, the Department of Energy decided to provide an incentive approximately half of the maximum allowed by the legislature, because it was the determination of the department that that would be enough to move the market. To some degree, it is. More is always better. So, on to EIP. We use a very small portion of EIP in dollars terms, the SIPI, or the Small Premium Project Program. In dollars, this is about 5%, roughly, of the total program, but by numbers of projects, it is the vast, vast majority. This is predominantly used for rental dwelling weatherization. In other words, this is lowering the cost of living for tenants. At 15 seconds, I'll just say it is a great program. SIPI very much helps out, and they will have to tell you more, I guess.
Great. Thank you.
Right. Chairman Helm and members of the committee, my name is Paul Curley. I'm a Salem resident, and my focus is on the residential energy tax credit. I call myself, a real estate developer landlord. I own about 1,500 residential properties, mostly here in Salem, a lot of them down the valley, and my forte is buying old apartments and fixing them up. I completely rehab these apartments from beginning to end. And what these are generally apartments built in the early 1970s. They have the single-pane aluminum windows that vibrate in the wind. These poor people can pay a couple hundred dollars a month for heat in a small apartment. So what I do, I buy these apartments, and I completely rehab them. And, for example, like the outsides, I can put on new siding, paint the outside, new roofs, new sheeting on the roofs, new drives, new sidewalks, you name it, landscaping. The insides are just as sometimes just as ridiculous. We many times replace whole kitchens. Can you imagine going in and tearing out the whole kitchen and four bare walls and starting from scratch? Bathrooms are worse. Most of these, the plumbing has been leaking for years. I have dry rot. I have mold. It's not healthy to live there. I have fungus, everything. My point in all of this is, in all this work that I do on these apartments, the last thing I focus on is the residential energy component, is the insulation component. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, it is so expensive to insulate and put in new windows that it's hard to take. And two, I'm the landlord. I don't pay for the heat in these units. So if I spend a lot of money on all this weatherization, I don't get a direct benefit. Now, I do get an indirect benefit, so I don't want to say that I don't get a benefit. If I can weatherize these apartments and get in brand new windows that are double pane with vinyl casings, I can get better tenants, better people that will take care of the place. They'll stay longer. Turnover costs money. So it's in my best interest, and I respect people and property to do it right, and I'm trying to do it right. The way the system works for me, when I do weatherization on an apartment complex, of the total cost, the tax credits pay about 25%. Pay about 25% of it. The Energy Trust has a credit that has a rebate that pays 25% of it. So I pay half the cost of the weatherization, and I can handle that. One last point. To show you how out of balance this can be, I bought an absolute slum in West Albany. They were dealing drugs out of the windows, just daring you to do something about it. The cost to rehab that was $2 million. The weatherization component was $600,000. It shows you how big of a bite this is for a guy like me. And luckily, the $600,000, like I say, I was able to reduce it by half. But you can see how important it is to a guy like me that's trying to do the right thing by the public and by my tenants and my properties. Thanks for listening to me.
Thank you.
Right here. Hi, my name is Jerry Page for weatherization. In 1975, I started in the weatherization business, specializing in existing buildings. So what Paul is saying is it isn't easy to convince a landlord to weatherize their property because they're not paying the bills. So what we've been able to do over many decades is combine programs so we make it cost-effective for them. The Energy Trust has reduced the amount of incentives that they'll pay for insulation. As a result, our insulation portion of our business dropped over 50%. If you reduce the SIPI part of this program, they'll reduce it even more. So, Representative Johnson, I appreciated you saying that you don't want to use tax credits to help the upper income. This is 100% low and moderate income people. For the other reasons that you want to weatherize these buildings, the cleanest, greenest energy is energy you don't use. So conservation is 100% non-polluting. We employ a lot of people. You understand all that. As to the RETC for ductless heat pumps, it is astonishing to me what people are paying for electric bills. I have a friend. They built a new house in 2002, but they used electric resistance heat. $700 a month. $500 a month. That was their last two bills. We're putting in some ductless heat pumps for them. We're accepting payments. These aren't wealthy people that are using these programs. So I encourage you to carve out that SIPI part of the program, the residential tax credit program, and realize that it's not just a tax credit. It's an affordable housing issue as well. Thank you.
Thank you all for your testimony. I'm going to invite Mary Mann up and James Valdez and Megan Beyer. Mary, why don't you go ahead?
Hello. Thank you, Chair Helm and committee members. My name is Mary Mann. I own Goose Hollow Window Company, and I have the dubious honor of being in the zip code 97035, Lake Oswego. But I technically reside in the city of River Grove, and I have just finished 8 years as a city councilor for the city of River Grove. In fact, short time. One of the things you should be doing is encouraging rich people to use these tax credits. When I see homeowners that are 3,500 square feet, 1970 buildings, trust me, they're using a lot of energy. These programs are actually income neutral. They're about kilowatt hours and therm savings, so it doesn't really matter because these improvements go with the buildings. Same thing for apartments. I'm supporting House Bill 2074.
Thank you.
Especially this component for multifamily. I'm also a 20-year-plus member of the Rental Housing Association, one of the first 20 Energy Trust trade ally contractors. I'm starting my 37th year selling windows and doors and representing our industry. I support the extension of the historic weatherization tax credit. It's not only building on what wise legislators did in 1979, but continue a nationwide trend to support energy conservation. Oregon was a primary national leader and policymaker in 1979 and should be very proud of our continued programs that are used as models for the rest of the nation. There seems to be a tendency to reduce energy conservation into in favor of renewables such as wind and solar. However, any engineer you speak with will tell you that you deal with pressurizing and sealing the envelope before you change a heating system. Consider the heating system as an extension of an energy source. Energy conservation is married to renewables but should not be divorced from them. Governor Brown's desire to support renewables and address climate change with reduction of greenhouse gases is just part of the total picture, which has its basis in energy conservation. Weatherizing means keeping the heat in the winter and the cool in during the summer. It means that the furnaces and air conditioners come on less, resulting in extending the life of whatever heating system you have. It means keeping a home cool enough in the summer not to need air conditioning. Extending these tax credits for the multifamily housing market is critical as rents increase in the valley and especially in the Portland metropolitan area. Our citizens not only deal with larger and larger portions of their income for housing, but also have no control over the secondary costs of living, i.e. heat, except to turn the heat off. We had one of the coldest winters in decades this year, and I quote from the Weather Channel, you know, the god of all channels. The first 2 months of meteorological winter, December through January 2017, ranked as the fifth coldest such period on record in Portland, the coldest since that aforementioned winter of 1978-1979. No one has to justify the need to heat a home. It's a health and safety issue, especially for our more vulnerable populations of the elderly, children, and disabled. Owners of rental property do not have to invest in these properties as they can rent them as they are. So the SIPI program, the small premium projects, combined with the Energy Trust of Oregon Cash and PUD programs around the state, whether it's, you know, on the coast down in Coos Quarry or out in La Grande, these incentives have been refined enough to be an incentive tool to tip the balance between doing and not doing. One of my friends, who is 81 years old and whose apartment complex was weatherized this summer, her heat bill went of $185 in January of 2016, dropped to $88, a huge savings. And she lives in Lake Oswego.
And Mary?
Yeah.
We're just about out of time.
Yeah, so that's fine.
If you can wrap up, I appreciate
yeah.
it.
Yeah. But I would say her heat bill is greatly reduced compared to most that I see in the marketplace in the 200 to 300, you know, range, whatever. So, anyway, there you go.
We appreciate your testimony. Thank you for coming today.
Hi, good afternoon, Chair Helm, members of the committee. For the record, my name is James Valdez, and I'm the policy manager for an organization called Northwest Sustainable Energy for Economic Development, also known as Northwest SEED. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony, and in the name of efficiency, which seems to be one of the themes here, I will provide testimony in support of both House Bill 2681 and House Bill 2760. Northwest SEED is a regional nonprofit organization, and we're dedicated to creating communities powered by locally controlled clean energy. Over the past few years, we've worked with communities around the state of Oregon, including in Eugene, the Rogue Valley, and the Columbia Gorge. As part of our market development programs, we build group purchasing campaigns that get people together and help residents buy solar and energy-efficient home heating appliances. The State Residential Energy Tax Credit, or RETC, and the property tax exemptions have been key to customers in making these investment decisions and making these more affordable. We strongly support extending and improving them. For many Oregonians outside the territory of investor-owned utilities and the territory that you saw earlier that Energy Trust of Oregon serves, these incentives are the only tools that they have to bring down the upfront cost of solar and efficiency and bring that within reach. The equipment supported by these incentives continues to bring long-term benefits in decades to come in reduced energy load and bill savings and helping stabilize household energy costs, which you've heard from other stakeholders here at the podium here. These incentives are important for helping residential customers play a role in meeting existing state goals that we have for long-term greenhouse gas reductions, as well as state goals for increased energy independence. And as we look to build a clean energy future for our state, building distributed renewables around Oregon helps provide greater resiliency, local job development opportunities, and energy security, in contrast to just building more larger central power plants. And really, I would just reiterate that we don't have any fossil fuel resources really within the state of Oregon, which is both, I guess, a good thing and a bad thing. So when we look to the future of energy sources that we can access, really the world and the future is renewable. And so we really see these residential tools as key to helping people be able to play a role directly in that future. So we urge you to support both House Bills 2681 and 2670, and thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Helm and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Megan Beyer, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon State Association of Electrical Workers in support of House Bill 2681. The Oregon State Association of Electrical Workers is made up of the seven Oregon IBEW locals and employs over 9,000 members in the electrical industry. The RETSI is important to making renewable energy and energy efficiency investments possible for Oregon homeowners. These improvements can have large upfront costs that make initial investments difficult despite long-term energy savings. The RETSI helps make these improvements more affordable and within reach for many homeowners. This incentive is also a job creator. These projects put our skilled electrical workforce to work across all regions of Oregon. It provides an economic boost for local communities from the coast to urban centers to eastern Oregon. We believe House Bill 2861 is a win-win for the environment and the economy and is an important part in reaching Oregon's energy goals. IBEW urges your support.
Thank you. Thank you all for coming and testifying today. We appreciate it. And I think this will be the last panel committee. Oriana Magnera, Bruce Anderson, and Janice Thompson. Go right ahead. Did I get your name right?
Close.
Close enough.
Good afternoon, Chair Helm and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Oriana Magnera. I'm the outreach and policy advocate for low-income and underserved communities at the Northwest Energy Coalition. I want to express our strong support for HB 2681 with amendments that in particular will serve rural and low-income communities. The Northwest Energy Coalition is an alliance of about 100 civic and human service and environmental organizations, progressive utilities, and businesses in Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Montana, and British Columbia. We promote development of renewable energy and energy conservation, consumer protection, low-income energy assistance, and fish and wildlife restoration on the Columbia and Snake Rivers. The purpose of the RETSI is to promote residential energy savings and to transform the market for high-efficiency equipment by encouraging the purchase of energy-efficient devices and renewable energy systems. It has an important role in reducing greenhouse gas emissions across the state. Many of our Oregon members and the consumers and citizens they serve will benefit directly from the continuation of the RETSI by allowing these consumers and citizens to afford crucial improvements to their homes, the expansion of renewable energy jobs, and overall benefit towards Oregon's goal of a cleaner energy economy. Currently, RETSI beneficiaries primarily use the credit for installing energy efficiency heat pumps, furnaces, and solar photovoltaic panels. The department reported in 2016 that since the inception, the program has provided 570,000 tax credits worth $172 million that saved enough energy to serve about 400,000 homes for a year. The RETSI saves homeowners and renters money by encouraging efficient use of electricity and natural gas. Incentive programs encouraging energy efficiency and renewables are effective and important tools for stimulating investment, especially for homeowners and landlords. In 2015, the state issued over 14,000 tax credits for energy efficiency, which allowed Oregonians to cut their utility bills by $2.5 million a year. Energy efficiency is an important component of our state economy. Investments in energy efficiency create and sustain a workforce of over 40,000 jobs statewide. 70% of these are small businesses with 11 employees or fewer. Investments in energy efficiency also result in financial savings that are spent elsewhere in our economy, resulting in an increase to Oregon's gross domestic product of over $350 million a year. Residential tax credits serve a crucial role in some rural areas in the state as the only incentive source for certain energy efficiencies and solar investments. In other areas, the RETSI leverages and other investments in energy efficiency, including incentives from the Energy Trust of Oregon, public utilities, and federal investment tax credits. In fact, as the Energy Trust of Oregon mentioned earlier, this could be reduced or eliminated if the residential energy tax credits expire, including gas, water heaters, gas furnaces, and ductless heat pumps. The Residential Energy Tax Credit Program works well and has been improved over time by the Oregon Legislature. Most recently in 2015, the legislature extended authority to Oregon Department of Energy to enable adjustments. By rule, all RETSI incentives based on market conditions. The addition of the this year of clear principles and metrics to guide this program will improve it and further allow it to increase the value and impact to Oregonians across the state and allow even more rural and low-income consumers to participate. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Bruce Anderson with Northwest Natural, and pleased to appear before you supporting House Bill 2681. You've heard how successful the RETC has been over its history, and we would encourage you to continue it. We also understand the current need for revenue and support the overall review of tax credits. Northwest Natural is supportive of the RETC and 2681 from an energy efficiency perspective, and that's important for us as a company and to our customers. We believe if our customers can reduce consumption by using less energy, that that's better for us all. Our energy efficiency programs aren't run by Northwest Natural, but by the Energy Trust of Oregon. We do promote energy efficiency programs and encourage our customers to consider moving to efficient appliances. And just to sum up, we would ask you to forward House Bill 2681 onto the Joint Tax Credit Committee to be reviewed along with all of the other tax credits out there. Thank you.
Janice Thompson, with Advocacy Director with the Oregon Citizens Utility Board, or CUB. Thanks to Chair Helm and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify. CUB advocates on behalf of residential ratepayers before the PUC, as well as before the legislature on statewide policy matters, and it's more on that front that we're here in support of House Bill 2681. I won't take any time to echo our agreement with previous testimony, but instead we'll focus on the public interest value of energy efficiency. That is, energy efficient incentives make sense because they help customers and utilities across the state save money and energy now. But there's also significant potential to displace the need for new investments in generation later. CUB also supports the proposed amendment concept. Even successful programs like RETC can be improved. Defining clear goals and benchmarks would provide legislators as well as groups like CUB with helpful new tools to analyze the program's impact over time. With that, thank you for your time and urge moving forward with House Bill 2681.
Thank you all for your testimony and sticking around so long. Appreciate it. Committee, I was incorrect. I've got two more folks, but if you've got a mosey, I would understand. And Carolina Arango, please come on up if you're still around.
Hi.
And then Jeff, Jeff Bissonnette, you signed up to speak on House Bill 2760, and you may not have been doing that when you were up before. So if you want to have a quick say on that bill, I think now's the time.
Thank you.
Chair Helm and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Carlina Arango, and I am a campaign organizer with Environment Oregon, which is a statewide citizen-based environmental advocacy organization. On behalf of our over 40,000 members and supporters in our state, Environment Oregon supports House Bill 2681. As a citizen-based organization with members all over our state, we've seen how much the RETC benefits Oregonians. In my spring campaign for solar energy, I've met people across the state who are concerned about the loss of the RETC. At a solar town hall I had a couple weeks ago in the Dalles, I talked with several students who are studying as part of the renewable energy program from Columbia Gorge Community College, and they expressed their concerns about the detrimental effects to the solar industry and to their solar job opportunities in the state if the RETC were to expire. In addition, over 20 Hood River and the Dalles businesses and the whole Hood River City Council have signed on in support of renewing the RETC. These credits are really one of the most important statewide solar incentives, especially for rural counties that lack other incentives for solar. So as you've heard today, without the RETC, our state solar industry will experience a substantial downturn, and as a result, we will lose a great deal of environmental, health, and economic benefits that solar energy provides. So for these reasons, Environment Oregon urges you to support House Bill 2681. Thank you again for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record again, Jeff Bissonnette with the Oregon Solar Energy Industries Association. Very quickly on House Bill 2760, which is the property tax exemption for on-site renewable energy, and a lot of that is solar. That is a much smaller but still very important part of the value proposition that we give to both people and businesses who are installing solar to specifically offset their energy usage. So then they are making investments in the value of their property, but they're not taxed on that investment. Again, it's I believe in the Legislative Revenue Office review, it's about $2 million incentive, but a very important piece, and another part that we hope that you'll look on as good policy and send to the overall money discussion in the revenue or joint tax process. Happy to answer questions.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this is a consideration on the property tax. Is
yes.
that right?
Yes.
And the, in effect, what the assessor is to do is to disregard the value of the renewable energy asset that otherwise would be considered part of the value of the property. Is that? I mean, I don't. I'm not talking technically. I'm talking about actual impact, actual effect.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, you've pretty much captured it there.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you both for your testimony. Appreciate it. And with that, I'm closing the public hearings on House Bill 2681, House Bill 2074, and House Bill 2760. And just to remind folks, we didn't get to House Bill 2072, so I'm carrying over House Bill 2072 to our next regularly scheduled meeting, and I'm carrying over House Bill 2111 to our next regularly scheduled meeting.
Mr. Chair, I note you had scheduled work sessions on those other bills. Do you plan to carry those over as well?
At this point, Representative Barnhart, I do not.
Okay.
Except for the RETC.
So, 2760.
I'm going to carry over the work sessions for House Bill 2681 to our next regularly scheduled meeting, and House Bill 2760 to our next regularly scheduled meeting. All right. And with that. Okay, just to be clear, thanks, Beth. Both the public hearing and the work session on House Bill 2072 are carried over to our next regularly scheduled meeting on Monday. And with that, thank you, committee members, for sticking with me, and the I'm adjourning the House Committee on Energy and Environment.